Chapter 9. Untapped Reserves. For more than 50 years, Damask Holdings had occupied one of Harnaden's most magnificent superspires. If not as soaring or massive as those belonging to the Intergalactic Banking Clan and its numerous subsidiaries, the building had the advantage of being constructed close to the largest of the city's naturally heated lakes, which had been incorporated into the property as an exclusive spa. The company's boardroom overlooked the lake and surrounding hot springs from an architectural setback on the 200th floor, where Higo Damask, Larsh Hill, and the chief officers and executives of Damask Holdings convened for twice-weekly meetings. That day, a one-quarter life-sized hollow presence stood at the center of the room's enormous circular hollow table, addressing the gathered munes in basic from the far-removed world of Naboo. A human of medium height, the speaker had dark brown hair combed straight back from a sloping forehead, a thick and lengthy beard and mustache, and bright blue eyes set in a symmetrical, if unremarkable, face. He was attired in layers of richly colored clothing, which included a vest embroidered with Futhork calligraphy and a brocade overcloak that fell to his knees, revealing tall, shiny, low-heeled leather boots. His name was Ars Varuna, and although he didn't hold a position in Naboo's monarchical government, he was speaking for the current pretender to the throne, Bon Tapelo, and was likely to be appointed governor of the city of Theed in the event of Tapelo's election.
Our campaign has been stalled by recent allegations from the leaders of some of the royal houses,
Varuna was telling the gathered munes.
Something has to be done to recapture momentum, and quickly. Counter-allegations made public by an unknown benefactor went a long way toward undoing the initial damage of the nobles' media releases. But a new wariness has gripped the electorate, strengthening the position of our provincial opponents.
Audio cancellation, one of the munes said toward the holosystem's pickups. Secured in the knowledge that conversation around the table had been muted, he went on. Are all the Naboo as hirsute and elaborately costumed as this Varuna? Larsh Hill replied,
They are traditionalists, tonsorially as well as politically. The style of dress and facial adornments pay homage to the regalia of Queen Elsinore Dentasia of Grismalt, who dispatched an expeditionary fleet of humans to the planet some 4,000 years ago, and to whom some Naboo claim to be able to trace an unbroken ancestry.
They are not, after all, as furry as Wookiees, said another.
Hill grunted affirmatively.
In addition to humans, Naboo supports a hairless amphibious species known as the Gungans. Perhaps indigenous, perhaps not, but in no position to represent the planet in galactic dealings in either case.
Seated with his back to the scenic view beyond the window wall, Plagueis studied the hollow image of Varuna. Generally, he loathed politicians for their pretensions and ill-informed belief that wealth and influence conferred true power. But politicians were a necessary evil, and if nothing else, Varuna burned with greed and ambition, which meant that he could be manipulated if necessary. The missions to Liana, Saluukami, and Abraxan were still fresh in his thoughts. On a philosophical level, he understood why the generations of Sith Lords that had preceded him had trained apprentices, to whom they had bequeathed their knowledge of the dark side of the Force, in anticipation of an eventual challenge for superiority. But with the grand plan culminating, it made no sense to challenge or kill beings of equal power unless they posed a threat to Plagueis' personal destiny. The Sith line would continue through him, or not at all. Thus the need for a partner rather than an underling, a cohort to help put into play the final stages of the imperative. It had long been his belief that the dark side would provide that one when the time was right. Plagueis hadn't anticipated having to turn his attention quite so suddenly to Naboo, but with the Trade Federation still grumbling about his support for the Outer Rim free trade zones, and the Gran worried about losing Podrace revenues to Gardula the Hutt, there were ample reasons for getting down to business. More important, Plagueis had long sought a planet that Damask Holdings and the steerage committee members could use as a base of operations. The possibility of having a future king at their beck and call was an added bonus, and even such unlikely players as Boss Cabra stood to profit from the Mune securing of Naboo. It was during his absence from Munalinst that Larsh Hill and some of the others had made overtures to the group vying for the throne of Naboo. In exchange for financial and logistical support in the upcoming election, Damask Holdings had asked for exclusive rights to transport plasma from the as-yet-untapped reservoir the Subtext Mining Group had recently discovered deep beneath the plateau that supported the capital city of Theed. Not every Naboo, however, was in favor of involving the planet in trade of the sort that would result from making plasma energy available, and a cadre of nobles had thrown their support behind Tapelo's chief rival for the monarchy. Reactivating the audio feed, Plagueis asked, "What was the nature of the allegations made by the royal houses?"
"First, they leaked word of the mining survey we had performed. But the revelation failed to have the intended effect, because several members of the electorate favor opening Naboo to galactic trade. Then, when they learned of our initial talks with Damask Holdings, the nobles accused us of selling Naboo to the highest bidder, to, and I'll quote, a shady extra-system cartel of ruthless criminals."
The human paused for a moment.
"You should understand, Magister, that our world has yet to overcome a long history of forbidding outside influence. The royal houses realize that trade is a sensitive issue and are now advocating for Naboo to oversee the transport of plasma to other worlds. But frankly, we lack both the funds and the expertise to make that a reality."
"How were the nobles able to learn of our overtures to you?" Plagueis asked.
"We haven't been able to determine the source."
Plagueis muted the audio feed and turned to Hill. "We need to consider that someone close to our organization may be responsible for this leak." Hill and some of the others nodded in agreement. "The royal houses need to be informed that a leap into the business of transgalactic shipping is ill-advised," Plagueis said when he had reactivated the audio feed. "Naboo will need funding, logistical support, and perhaps even Republic legislation, and it is precisely in those areas where Damask Holdings can serve as an intermediary. Actual funding would come from the Intergalactic Banking Clan, and other conglomerates would be involved in assisting Naboo in tapping the plasma and in the construction of a spaceport of sufficient size to handle the ships needed to transport it." Varuna stroked his tapered beard.
"Mon Tapelo will certainly want to address these points with the electorate."
Plagueis liked what he was hearing. "You mentioned certain counter-allegations released by an unknown party."
"Yes, and I confess that we were as surprised by the information as anyone. It seems that our group is not the first to seek the advice and support of off-world interests. Roughly 60 standard years ago, at the height of a war between the Naboo and the Gungans, our monarch was killed, and it has now emerged that some members of the very same royal houses that opposed Tapelo struck a secret deal with a mercenary group to intervene in the war should the Naboo suffer further setbacks. Fortunately, the conflict was resolved without the need for outside help. In fact, as a result of that conflict, the monarchy has since been an elected rather than hereditary post."
"You say that the information came as a surprise," Plagueis continued. Varuna nodded.
"The information had to have been provided by a source within the opposition."
It now fell to Larsh Hill to mute the feed.
"Varuna is correct. We were able to trace the release of the information to the young son of one of the nobles. In the hope of avoiding a scandal that could divide the electorate, the head of the royal house has perpetuated a lie that the Tapelo group chanced on the information and made it public, when actually only someone with access to the family archives could have discovered it."
His interest piqued. Plagueis said, "What is the name of the royal family?"
"Palpatine."
"And the son?"
"Just that. He goes by the cognomen alone."
Plagueis leaned back in the chair to consider this, then said, "We may have found a potential ally. Someone willing to keep us informed of the royals' plans for the election."
"An agent,"
Hill said. An inside man, as it were. Plagueis canceled the mute function. We wish to visit Naboo in order to discuss these matters face to face. Varuna was clearly surprised.
A public appearance by you would allow us to refute any allegations of secret collusion.
Then all of us have something to gain. Varuna bowed at the waist.
It will be our great honor to welcome you, Magister Damask.
Later it would be said by Naboo and Gungan alike that they couldn't recall a colder winter than the one that followed Higo Damask's autumnal visit to their world. The rivers and even the falls below Theed froze. The rolling plains and tall forests were blanketed 3 meters deep with snow. Plasmic quakes rocked the Gallo Mountains and the lake country, the holy places, and the undersea city of Otogunga. And many of the egresses of the underwaterways that hollowed the planet were blocked by ice floes. Tapalo and Varuna had insisted on sending one of Naboo's signature starships to transport the Munes from Munalinst, and the sleek Nubian had set down at Theed spaceport, a small facility that would have to be enlarged 20-fold if Naboo hoped to one day become a player in galactic commerce. The city itself struck Plagueis as the very antithesis of Hartnaden. Where the capital of Munalinst was vertical, angular, and austere, Theed was low, convex and condensed, dominated by rotundas crowned with verdigris domes or flat roofs and tiered towers supported by round-topped archways. A river and several tributaries ran through the place, spanned by filigreed bridges and plunging in a series of high falls from an escarpment to verdant flatlands below. A cortege of air skimmers carried the black-robed Munes through streets better suited to pedestrian traffic to the interior courtyard of an ancient palace, where pretender to the throne Bontapolo, Varuna, and several other human advisors and would-be ministers of both sexes were on hand to welcome them. Draped in shimmer silk robes and propped by boots with high heels, the bearded and blonde-haired Tapalo already carried himself like a regent, albeit of a second-rate world, remaining seated while Higo Damask and the rest of the Munes were introduced and flanked by guards dressed in flare-skirted uniforms and armed with vintage blasters. Varuna, on the other hand, immediately fell into step alongside Damask as the Munes were being escorted into the central building of the complex.
As I said when we spoke weeks back, Magister Damask, we are honored by your visit.
And as I told you then, we all have something to gain. Damask turned slightly to look down at him. Especially you, I suspect. Varuna gestured to himself in question. Not now, Damask said softly. When the time is right, you and I will confer privately. Under a broad arch and through a lobby of polished stone, they moved as a group, ultimately arriving at a second small courtyard where several tables had been set up, some overflowing with food and drink, and the largest reserved for the Munes. No sooner were they seated than servants appeared and began serving food, including various meats that the Munes politely declined. The practice of consuming food while conducting business was one that Damask had grown to tolerate in his dealings with humans, but in secret he detested it. For many years he had detested the company of humans as well. Barbaric meat-eaters that they were, humans were a highly evolved species. Given their native intelligence and shrewd faculties, they deserved to be treated with the same deference Munes were afforded. And yet many of the galaxy's sapient species considered themselves to be equal to humans, who had only themselves to blame. Unlike Munes, humans had no compunctions about lowering themselves to the level of less advanced beings. The slow-witted, disadvantaged, needy, and pitiful, making a pretense of equality and demonstrating a willingness to work and sweat cheek by dewlaps alongside them. Instead of celebrating their superiority, they frequently allowed themselves to be dragged down into mediocrity. A Mune would no sooner accept a position as a starship pilot or a smuggler than he would a career diplomat or a politician, unless required to do so for the greater good of Munes everywhere. Humans, though, could be found in every occupation. But what made them especially intriguing was their seeming intent to spread themselves to the far reaches of the galaxy, without any sense of control or planning, at whatever cost, and using up world after world in their insatiable quest, as if their diaspora from the core reflected some sort of species imperative. More important, the Force seemed not only to allow their unchecked dissemination, but to support it. In human hands, Damask suspected, rested the profane future of the galaxy. Naboo Blossomwine was still being poured when the Munes made their pitch to the Tapelo group, employing the courtyard's holoprojector to provide a virtual portrait of what Theed and other nearby cities might look like 10 years on. Funding by the IBC would be allocated to tapping the plasma reservoir beneath the plateau. At the same time, Outer Rim Construction and Assembly, one of Cabra's companies, would build an enormous refinery on the site of what was currently parkland, overlooking the Verdugo Plunge, housing the technology inside a triple-domed structure of neoclassical design. The Munes detailed how the cliff walls could be stabilized and the tributaries of the Salillo River rerouted without disturbing the existing architecture or Theed's network of underground tunnels. Below the cliffs, the Trade Federation would enlarge Theed's spaceport, constructing a massive landing platform that would follow the natural curve of the escarpment and open a second commercial port at Spinnaker. By the time the pitch concluded, Tapelo looked stricken.
"Clearly you've put a good deal of thought into this," he said to Larsh Hill. "But there is no room in your plans for Naboo firms."
"The last thing we want is to have these construction projects be seen as signs of foreign occupation," Hill said. "Our partners wish to work closely with Naboo's own plasma energy engineering and the Theed Space Vessel Engineering Corporation to make certain that the improvements are viewed as a cooperative effort. When the construction phases are completed, the refinery and the spaceports will be under your full control."
Some of the color returned to Tapelo's face.
"The opposition contends that Naboo will be forever indebted to the banking clan and the Trade Federation."
"Only until the plasma begins to flow," Damask said. "I understand your trepidation, but the question you need to ask yourselves is whether you can win the crown without our help."
Separate conversations erupted at every table.
"I suppose so, Magister," Tapelo said, signaling for quiet. "But perhaps it's better to run the risk of defeat rather than ascend to the throne in dishonor."
"Dishonor?"
Hill repeated in aggrieved disbelief.
"Have we crossed the galaxy to be insulted?"
"Wait," Varuna said, coming to his feet and gesturing for calm.
"We meant no insult to Damask Holdings."
He turned to face Tapelo and his hand-picked team of ministers and advisers.
"Yes, we must be mindful of the concerns of the present electorate, but we shouldn't allow the fearful voices of a few to cripple our chance of joining the galactic community and raising the profile of the entire Chamal sector. I suggest we act boldly. To avoid being perceived as having bowed to pressure, I say we use this unprecedented visit by Damask Holdings to announce publicly that we, and we alone, are capable of entering into an arrangement with the banking clan and others that will allow Naboo to restructure its debt, achieve favored world status with the core, and provide for tax cuts, lower interest rates, and endless opportunities for employment both on and off-world."
He clenched his fist for emphasis.
"We must seize this moment before it disappears."
Slowly Tapelo and the others began to nod in agreement.
"Do you have anything to add, Magister Damask?" Tapelo said at last.
Damask spread his hands.
"Only that we couldn't have stated our case any better than Theed's future governor already has."
"Hear, hear,"
one of Tapelo's advisers said, lifting his goblet of wine in a toast to Varuna. The rest followed suit and drank.
And Damask thought, one day soon, Varuna will be the king of Naboo. The plan called for the Munes to spend the night in Tleed and resume talks in the morning. With Hill and the others being shown to accommodations, Plagueis excused himself and struck out on foot for the university building on the opposite side of the city. His route took him through leafy parks over two bridges past towers and obelisks, and through the heart of Palace Plaza with its pair of triumphal arches. Crowned by a statue of a human figure, the university's central rotunda was set back from one of the Soliu tributaries, dominating a precinct of stately buildings and public places. Plagueis located the student center and went to the registration desk, which was staffed by a young, fair-haired female who stared openly at him as he approached.
"I'm looking for a student named Palpatine," he said in Basic.
"I know him,"
she said, nodding.
"Do you know where I might find him just now? Is he perhaps attending a class?"
She blew out her breath.
"He comes and goes. Maybe I saw him at the youth program building."
"Maybe."
"I think it was him."
"Humans," Plagueis thought. "Can you direct me there?"
Her answer was a flimsy map, which Plagueis used to weave his way across campus to the headquarters of the Legislative Youth Program, an organization that oversaw Naboo's mandatory public service curricula. Young people of both sexes buzzed about him, some scarcely noticing him, others going out of their way to get a closer look. At various times, he asked after Palpatine, and was able to narrow his search to a square that fronted the columned library, where he eventually recognized Palpatine from hollows Hill had provided, walking briskly through the square in the company of a human male nearly twice his age, black-haired, and wearing more formal attire. Palpatine himself was dressed in slacks, short boots, and a loose-fitting shirt that was closed at the collar. Of average height, he had wavy red hair, a prominent nose, and a narrow face that humans would probably have found friendly. His back was straight, his arms were long relative to the length of his torso, and he moved with an easy grace. For some time, Plagueis observed him from a distance, approaching only after Palpatine had parted company with the older man. Palpatine didn't spy him until Plagueis was only steps away, and when he did, he turned sharply and began to walk in the opposite direction.
"Young human," Plagueis said, hastening his own pace. "A moment of your time."
When Palpatine failed to acknowledge him, he lengthened his stride and called,
"Palpatine!"
Slowing to a reluctant halt, Palpatine looked over his shoulder.
"How do you know my name?"
"I know more about you than just your name," Plagueis said, coming abreast of him.
Interest and caution mingled in Palpatine's blue eyes.
"Normally I take exception to people claiming to know something about me, but since I know something about you as well, I'll restrain myself."
"From doing what?" Plagueis wondered. "What is it you know about me?"
Palpatine exhaled in mild impatience.
"You're Higo Damask, the president, no, the magister of Damask Holdings. My father said that you were coming to Naboo to meet with Bontapolo. Your group is shoring up his bid for the throne."
"Did your father say that I might be coming to meet with you also?"
"Why would he? And what exactly is it you want with me?"
"I believe we have something in common."
"I very much doubt that."
"Perhaps all the more reason to become acquainted, then."
Palpatine glanced around him, as if searching for an escape.
"Who was the man you were speaking with earlier?" Plagueis asked.
Palpatine started to say something, then cut himself off and began again.
"My mentor in the youth program. His name is Vida Kim. He's an aide to Naboo's Republic Senator, and will likely succeed her."
He looked hard at Plagueis.
"And not a supporter of Tapelo."
Plagueis weighed the response.
"Are you interested in politics beyond your participation in the Legislative Youth Program?"
"I'm not sure what I want to do after university."
"But you've some interest in politics."
"I didn't say that. I said I wasn't sure."
Plagueis nodded and looked up at the library building.
"I'm a stranger to Theed. Would you consider showing me around?"
Palpatine's jaw dropped a bit.
"Listen, I'm
just a short tour."
Engaging in small talk, they walked along the river in the direction of the concert hall and Queen Iram's Needle, then crossed a footbridge and began to angle toward the palace complex. Aside from providing Plagueis with hollows of Palpatine, Larsh Hill hadn't been able to offer much information regarding the youth's background. Though he lacked an appellation, Palpatine's father was a wealthy, influential royal with a reputation for advocating for Naboo's continued independence and isolation. The family name was thought to be an ancient name of state among hereditary noble families, or perhaps a name borrowed from an ancient region of Naboo.
"Theed is a beautiful city," Plagueis remarked as they emerged from a narrow lane into the palace plaza.
"If you like museums," Palpatine said offhandedly.
"You've no interest in art?" Palpatine looked at him sideways.
"I enjoy art, but I'm more of a minimalist."
"In all things?"
"I wish Theed weren't so crowded. I wish the winters were milder. I wish our king had fewer advisers and ministers."
"That sounds like a political statement."
"It's simply my personal opinion."
"They're not mutually exclusive."
Palpatine stopped short.
"What are you attempting to draw out of me?"
Plagueis indicated a nearby bench. When Palpatine finally relented and sat down, Plagueis said,
"It has come to my attention that you were responsible for the release of some information that has aided Tapelo's campaign."
Genuine surprise blossomed on Palpatine's face.
"How?"
Plagueis held up a hand.
"That isn't important right now. What is that you did so against what would have been the wishes of your father, your mentor, and some of the other royals."
"Are you planning to divulge this?"
Plagueis searched Palpatine's face.
"What might happen if I did?"
"To begin with, my father would murder me."
"Literally," Palpatine exhaled forcefully.
"He would disown me."
"It's true, then.
You and your father find yourselves on opposite sides of the issues that animate the coming election."
Palpatine lowered his gaze to the ground.
"It would be far stranger to find ourselves on the same side of any issue."
He looked up again at Plagueis.
"I want to see Naboo break with the past. I want us to belong to the greater galaxy. Is it wrong to want to play an important role in the history of the Republic?"
Plagueis rocked his head.
"Governments rise and fall."
"You have a better idea of how to govern the galaxy?"
Plagueis allowed a laugh.
"I'm just an old mune who wouldn't know about that."
Seeing through him, Palpatine snorted.
"Just how old are you?"
"In human years, I would be well over 100. Palpatine whistled.
"I envy you that."
"Why?"
"All the things you've done and can still do."
"What would you do?"
"Everything,"
Palpatine said. They got up from the bench and began to amble back toward the university complex. Plagueis submerged himself deeply in the Force to study Palpatine, but he was unable to glean very much. Humans were difficult to read in the easiest of cases, and Palpatine's mind was awash in conflict.
"So much going on in that small brain," Plagueis told himself. "So much emotional current and self-interest.
So unlike the predictable, focused intellects of the Outer Rim sentients, especially the hive-minded among them." Palpatine stopped alongside a brightly colored, triple-finned landspeeder with a pointed nose and a repulsor lift engine that looked powerful enough to raise a load-lifter droid.
"This vehicle is yours?" Plagueis asked.
Pride shone in Palpatine's eyes.
"A prototype patrol-grade flash. I race competitively."
"Do you win?"
"Why else would I bother racing?"
Climbing into the speeder, Palpatine centered himself at the controls.
"I have just the thing to adorn your rearview mirror," Plagueis said.
From his breast pocket, he fished a coin of pure erodium, dangling from a length of chain, and dropped it into the palm of Palpatine's hand.
"It's an antique."
The young human appraised the gift.
"I've never seen anything like it."
"It's yours."
Palpatine showed him a questioning look.
"Who knows? Perhaps you'll go into banking one day," Plagueis said.
Palpatine laughed in a relaxed way.
"Unlikely, Magister Damask."
"I suppose there are better ways to earn credits."
Palpatine shook his head.
"Credits don't interest me."
"I'm beginning to wonder just what does." Palpatine bit back whatever he was about to say. "Palpatine, I wonder how you would feel about working with us. Damask Holdings, I mean."
Palpatine's thick eyebrows beetled.
"In what capacity?"
"To be perfectly blunt, as a kind of spy."
He went on before Palpatine could speak. "I won't say that you and I want the same things for Naboo, because clearly, and notwithstanding your feelings about the architecture, you hold your world dear. My group, however, is less interested in Naboo's government than it is in Naboo's plasma, and what it will fetch on the open market."
Palpatine looked as if the plain truth was something new to him.
"If you had phrased that any differently, I would have rejected your offer out of hand."
"Then you accept? You're willing to update us regarding whatever political machinations your father's group may have in the works?"
"Only if I can report directly to you."
Plagueis tried once more to see him in the Force.
"Is that your wish?"
Palpatine returned a sober nod.
"It is."
"Then by all means, you'll report exclusively to me," Plagueis said.
"I'll see to it that the necessary arrangements are made." He stepped away from the speeder as Palpatine powered it up. Palpatine fell silent for a moment.
"I could take you for a ride tomorrow,"
he said at last, above the whine of the engine.
"If you have time, I mean. Show you some more of Theed and the outskirts."
"If I have your word, you won't go too fast?"
Palpatine smiled wickedly.
"Only fast enough to keep it interesting."